You know, they say that men are hired for who they're going to be and women are hired for what they've already done. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm such an anomaly in that because I'm just a blag artist who's just bullshitting my way through to death.
What's your stance on cancel culture then?
I just think it's bollocks.
Obviously being an ex-lover under myself.
Yeah.
You have obviously spoken out about the show over the years. The body image stuff around it, do you feel like it's got better? Jamila,
hello.
Welcome to So Wrong It's Right.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so pleased that you were up for coming on the pod because I am a big fan of you. I actually, if I think of you, I think of you back at T4. That's obviously when I first became aware of you, and probably some of my like Gen Z listeners, watchers are like, what's T4? Like T4 was it. Like that was like Saturday morning. This was like the show. Mm-hmm. And you've done so much, radio, DJ, actor, activist. How do you describe yourself if someone says, who is Jamila?
The most annoying woman on the internet. Very proud.
Is that as good as take that crown?
Yeah. Yeah, I got threatened because for a while, I feel like Richie and Pretty and Suella took my throne as the most problematic Asians in the UK, but I'm back to reclaim now that they're gone.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, that's a tough competition.
It was really hard.
That's a tough competition.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very hold my beer for a while.
Yeah.
But I'm back and I'm ready.
You're back. What do you think it is that annoys people so much?
Oh, I don't know. I think part of it is that I am actually annoying, and then part of it is just that a woman with an opinion and any sense of self-esteem is grating because we're not used to seeing that in society. Mm-hmm. So it's very much so like, who does she think she is?
Yes.
And that's just something that we do systematically to all women who have any moment of prominence. Mm-hmm. It's literally throughout history, it's a perfect pattern of the media picks a woman out of all the other women who are all kind of doing the same thing and goes, let's focus on her, she's interesting.
Yeah.
And then once you're completely overexposed, it's time to take you down for the kill. I guess I was one of the girls who got chosen and everyone made a big deal of me. And I knew the whole time it was happening that it was just a ticking time bomb until
I got
ripped to pieces.
So when you were in the eye of it, you were very aware that as I go up, they're going to pull me back down.
Yeah, because it had already happened to me in the UK. So I was now 10 years later, back in a brand new version of the same career in America.
So what took you over to America in the first place?
A lot, really. I'd always wanted to go. I kind of come to a point in my life where I'd done a lot of the things that I wanted to do in the UK. And I was hitting a glass ceiling that seems to no longer exist now, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful sign of progress in the United Kingdom. But, you know, 28 back then was quite old and it was considered, come on, now you're going to need a rebirth, you know,
it's
you're
crazy,
going to need to go on Strictly Come Dancing and like make people like this is time for act two. And I'm like, fucking hell, 28 is surely still act one.
Yeah.
And I was kind of just, you know, felt like I was being ushered towards the glue factory. And and so I was like, what's better to leave before you're asked to leave? And so I just buggered off and I didn't really want to be on telly anymore, lol. And I wanted to just be a writer and a DJ. And so I went to America to start an anonymous life and then just couldn't keep my fucking mouth shut.
And then you were cast in The Good Place.
Yeah, I got cast in The Good Place. I'd never acted before, didn't want to be an actor.
How did you end up in the audition?
Just... No. sorry.
Yeah,
no, I'm actually, I don't think I'm good enough at that. I think I'd suck my way down the industry. Actually, it'd be really sad.
Suck yourself out of a job.
Yeah. Just suck my way to the nearest curb. I just they were looking for, I think, like an annoying English woman who's brown. And so it sort of felt natural that I would at least go up for the role. My managers forced me to because I was too shy. And I went. And I think because I was so sure I wouldn't get it, I was just had such a laugh at the audition because I thought it was so funny that I was there. And I was just trying to make the most of it so I'd have funnier anecdotes to tell my friends. And I think they mistook that for competence. And then they gave me the job. And then I had to fucking swim for my life to stay afloat on that show for 4 years.
Unbelievable, though.
Yeah.
And what a cast.
I know. I'm very, very proud of myself for not losing my shit. Because it was Lisa Kudrow, Maya Rudolph, my main cast. Ted Danson taught me how to dance on that show.
It's
and
incredible.
Twirled me around like a little princess. And so I really had the time of my life. And I'm so glad that I did that. And I think it was a... it's just been part of this long trajectory of blag that has been my 20s and 30s, where I have never planned on being on television. I never planned on being a writer. I never planned on being a radio DJ. I never planned on being an actor. Really just wanted to probably stay a teacher forever, or if I could have worked in a video shop forever, I would have, because I fucking loved that job.
It's like a Blockbuster.
Yeah, it was VidBiz and then it was Blockbuster, and it remains the happiest like time of my life. But I ended up in this trajectory having no idea what I'm doing, and women are so rarely encouraged to do things that they aren't absolute experts at. And yet, you know, they say that men are hired for who they're going to be and women are hired for what they've already done. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm such an anomaly in that, because I'm just a blag artist who's just bullshitting my way through to death.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really fun. It's so fun. It's absolutely terrifying. And obviously I can massively cock it up sometimes. But I really like that about me.
It's incredible.
Is the fact that I'm like, the bigger the clusterfuck, the funnier the story. And so because of that, I'm able to run at failure. And then I've accidentally found success that I would never have known if I'd just stayed in my lane.
Who taught you to blag it? Like, where does that come from? Was it just innately in you, or was it something in your upbringing where someone was like,
no,
you can do it?
It was a book by Danny Wallace that I read when I was 19 called The Yes Man, about a man with depression who just started saying yes to everything. And it changed his entire life and took him on all these adventures. So I think apart from anal, I did that. That's the only place I've got a very small bum hole. So
you're not missing anything.
Yeah, it's like a cat.
I mean, my gay friends would disagree.
That's the only thing I didn't say yes to, but everything else, I just went off on all these adventures. Like, move to America, sure. Become an actress, sure. Go and speak at the UN, sure. You know, just I don't know what's happening. Like, least of all, whenever people are like, she's, you know, she's really like trying to carve out a career for herself, I'm like, where? Like, what is this trajectory?
What's your stance on cancel culture then?
I just think it's bollocks.
So you believe cancelling someone is counterintuitive?
Yeah. First of all, very few people ever actually get cancelled. Second of all, I think the concept of it is great because it democratized who we were able to say, you're fucking up.
Yeah.
You're doing something dangerous. So I'm pro the idea of the ability to call people out. But I think trying to take everything away from someone just feels very counterintuitive, that we would be so, you know, like, we're anti the carceral system, we're anti the prison system, but we behave like cops with each other. And then we want to throw people away forever. We treat human beings as if they're disposable. Like, that's very prison system-esque. And so I think that it just doesn't really make sense to me. I'm like, surely the goal here is to get everyone on side and we're all on the same team and then we can do this shit together. In bigger numbers, rather than just keep going, oh, you're not perfect, you can fuck off, you can fuck off, you can fuck off. It's like, who's going to be left?
Well, it feels like you say, we're constantly standing trial in the court of human opinion. And I feel like for myself, who's someone who kind of was like thrust at a platform kind of by accident, didn't intentionally knowing going on a show at Love Island would open doors, but on series three, not knowing it could open so many, then you have this like kind of audience of people who are like waiting for you to speak next. And I'm a very outspoken, opinionated person, and I am that way in so many ways. And there's so many areas that I'm like, I can't comment on that because I've been so terrified now. Like, I've been kind of, I feel like I'm scared to, I'm like, okay, I feel really passionately about this. And I get ready to write something on social media. And then I'm like, the fear of like the mob who don't agree, because you're okay as long as they agree with you, right? But the other side don't agree with you, they come up with their pitchforks. How have, over the years, have you kind of quieted that noise? Because that's something that I would like to be in a position where I could be like, yeah, I'm gonna speak up on this, and I don't care that you don't agree with me.
Yeah, I don't really require the approval of someone that I don't know.
But in the sense that, don't you feel that when you are in this like industry and you're working with different companies and whatever, and that you felt there's so many restraints, and you probably don't have that now. You probably have the freedom to think.
No, the restraints become bigger and more dangerous the more successful you become.
Yeah. So do you feel like sometimes that you're silenced on things, or never?
I don't feel silenced on things personally, but I'm also a maniac and I've lost like millions and millions of dollars. So nobody should ever listen to me about anything.
So like basically I'm mostly doing... but there is always going to be, yeah. There'll be people that are like, well, yeah, no, you're not doing
this. I mostly do... I've been punished for speaking out, asking for a ceasefire heavily in my career. So it's just like, it's...
people have actively like dismissed
you. Yeah, and this has been the same for the diet industry. Like I've pissed off magazines, I've pissed off public figures, you know, because I'm going after their main source of advertising revenue. I get punished all the time. For me, I guess it's a bit different in that I am on a crusade to try to go back and save my 12-year-old self and every other 12-year-old in like the world. And so I guess I mostly work to be able to maintain a platform to be able to say what I want to say rather than the other way around. And so for me, I guess it's a more specific thing where speaking about cultural phenomena or wrongs is something that I'm just really, really interested in. I'm also a comedian, and so I like to be able to do both. But it's compulsive almost for me. I literally can't shut up. It's actually...
It's a good thing, though.
Quite sad. And it's definitely stressful, but I...
Is that how iWay came about? Because it wasn't originally a podcast, was it?
It was a social movement trying to help women reclaim their value outside of just a weighing scale.
Yeah.
You know, and remember all the things you are and all the things that your body does and all the ways in which you are amazing and you contribute to society. That has nothing to do with a number on a scale that we just get reduced to. And then that eventually became so viral all over the world and then stayed viral for like 5 years. And so it grew into a podcast and then production series. And now we're turning it into a giant exercise movement that's just for mental health because the exercise industry has become so deeply entrenched in diet culture or vice versa. They're just married now. And so it's so hard to find anywhere that you can exercise safely if you're in a bigger body or if you're pregnant or if you're disabled or if you're, I don't know, sometimes people with darker skin don't feel like they're welcome in a yoga space because it feels very thin and white. It's just so exclusionary. It's so unaffordable. The clothes are ridiculous. Like, why do we need to exercise? Why does everyone feel like they need to exercise in a bra and like lemon coloured shorts that you can see your, you know, your bum hole through? Like, why? That's great for some people and they look wonderful in those outfits, but not everyone feels comfortable wearing those things. Why are there mirrors everywhere? Why are the pictures so exclusionary? So I decided to create this really safe space, and we're going on tour all over the UK starting in January, and I'm really trying to reintroduce self-defense as a form of exercise so that we can learn to kick the fucking shit out of someone and improve our mental health, because I think it's so fucked that we don't talk more about the fact that women can't just go for a walk at the end of the day.
I know.
Without it being a privilege, not a right, that we get home safely. It's so bad for your cortisol levels all the time to be thinking about how you're going to get home alive and then whether someone's going to kill you in your home.
Insane. It was such an interesting light bulb moment because I had this conversation with my husband not long ago and he was with me. It's basically had this thing, and you've probably done it too, as so many women listening probably done this. If I'm staying in a hotel by myself and I say I get out of the lift with a man and I don't know this man, I will not go into my room.
Of course.
I will kind of hover, or I would wait for him to turn the corner before he's, or I'd walk past my door.
Yeah.
And I kind of did it by default, so I kind of forgot he was with me and he was like, where are you going? And then I explained to him what I was doing and he was so genuine. He's got a sister, got a mum, got a wife. He was like, what? And I was like, yeah. I was like, it's just autopilot things that women do to stay safe. Like, he was genuinely kind of one shot and like a little bit confused by it. Like you say, it's just very normal that, well, if a girl, you want to walk down your street on your own late at night, godforsaken address, something might happen to you. Why is that so normalised?
But also, like, then costs us more money to get home safely because you've got to take a cab instead of the night bus. But even then, the cab drivers, like, I think 3,000 women were raped in a cab, in Ubers, I think it was, maybe 5 or 6 years ago in 1 year, been documented something like 3,000 people. So you just, like, feel like you're rolling the dice at all times in your life. And I don't understand why we don't talk about this all of the time. It's such a mad thing to exist with. It's like Grand Theft Auto, but it's every single day of your life from the age of about 6 onwards. And you feel like prey. And I think one of the reasons that I would love to be able to bring more self-defense classes back as exercise, as commonplace exercise, is because learning how to kick the shit out of someone has completely changed my gait, like the way that I stand, the way that I walk. All of that has shifted and I just feel much more confident. It doesn't mean that I'm, you know, I'm not like Jackie Chan, you know, but I, no one knows who that is, or at The Rock, guys, you know, but even just knowing the basics of what I would do makes me feel less vulnerable. It makes 100%. You feel like a sitting duck. It makes you feel like prey when you have no idea what you would do if someone grabbed you.
Yeah.
And now I'm almost at a point of like, come on then.
Try me.
Fucking try it. Yeah. Where it's like, calm down.
Yeah.
But that's a much healthier place to be. So I think, wouldn't it be wonderful? We went to New York and did this big event where we had this member of the Secret Service come on and teach everyone self-defense tips. And then everyone was just sort of like hype.
Ready.
Like hype. And then we took 300 women on a walk who'd all just learned how to like gouge someone's eyes out, basically.
They're like, come on.
Yeah. And it was the most fun. It was the first time I've ever felt completely safe walking at night, was surrounded by 300 women who'd all just become bodyguards for each other.
They're ready for service.
So yeah, so we're trying to do stuff like that. And that's what has now like turned into. And I think that's the future of Ai Weiwei, is bringing people together to exercise and community and make it all about mental health and just try a new way to consistently try to assassinate the diet industry.
I've read a lot about, you know, your relationship with food and your the work you've done, and you're, like you say, coming for these horrendous diet culture and things. Like you said about bringing exercise back to, it doesn't have to be about weight. So my sort of story, if you want to go there, with, you know, weight and food things, having been someone that was always like so skinny at school, which at the time in our kind of 90s was like, okay, fine, you tick the box, like you're doing it, you know, already. But when I went into exercise in my like later teens, 20s, but why? You don't need to. Even people say that to me now, why are you going to the gym? You don't need to go to the gym. Like, I don't go to the gym actually at all about weight. I go to the gym so I don't slap someone at work. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not to do, but I think people can't get their head around exercise.
If you come to my exercise movement, I'll teach you how to slap someone at work.
I'd love that. But it's such an interesting thing about the, you know, the way we correlate the two.
Yes.
And I feel that a lot has changed since, like, I was at school and we were at school. And, you know, I think body positivity, well, it wasn't even a thing then. It was like, you want to look ill. That was basically what people wanted to look like.
Yeah, we were emulating famine as a form of fashion.
It was like the fashion. Yeah. It's just
really mortifying.
And
when
once
you look,
I got
back on
in
it,
love with training and weightlifting and eating and feeling strong, once, like you just said, once you feel like that, you'll never look back, because you can't understand how good you feel until you've done it.
Yeah, and I worry about how many women especially, but I think an increasing amount of men, especially gay men, have to deal with how exhausting it is to think about food all day, to feel guilty and ashamed all day, to be counting calories, just to spend all of this energy and like worry that you're aging, like worry about, you know, current beauty standards that are always changing, and therefore not spending that time focusing on making themselves happy, making themselves come, growing their lives, preparing for their second and third act in life. Mm. All of these things that are so much more important. And I think when I finally, at about 30, started to really take control back of my life and stop feeding this monster of demands on my aesthetic, it completely set me free. And then you can see the trajectory in my life and my career just went pow, because I suddenly had so much more time when I wasn't thinking about myself and I wasn't thinking about food and I wasn't thinking about being thin all the time.
You recently posted a picture on your Instagram where your dress, the zip went on.
Oh, I hulked out on my holiday in Italy.
And the zip went, and you said it made you feel pride.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
But just I couldn't believe how many messages I got because of that post, because it went viral. And
there's
then
an insane amount of comments, shares.
It was wild how much it resonated with people, and it made me feel very happy and then also incredibly sad. It was just about all of us who don't eat on holiday, like how many people panic about the weeks leading up to holiday. And then you sit there and you tell everyone like, no, I just really want this salad with no dressing at lunch in Italy. Mm. Like, oh no, I don't fancy a gelato. Yeah. I'll maybe have a bit of a sorbet. And I was talking about how, like, when I was younger, I used to forgo packing like a favorite pair of shoes because I wanted to pack my weighing scales so I could monitor myself every single day of the holiday and just spend the whole time sucking in and just panicking. And then how many holidays I went to amazing places with amazing little restaurants that I could have tried on the, you know, on the seafront with my loved ones. And instead I just missed out on this massive part of what's fun about going to new places and really like immersing yourself in the culture. And so it was just a kind of realization that it's so amazing to get to an age where 20 years later I go on holiday for the food and I eat everything and I don't give a shit, and if I've got a belly when I come back, that's fine, it doesn't matter, it means I lived. It's a my clothes tearing by the end of a holiday is a sign of like, God, I'm so lucky that I got to eat those things and have those memories. And it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. It's like you come back with a bit of water retention, you move on, you just keep it moving.
What would you say to people listening to this who would think, I'll never be able to feel like that? I could never imagine being okay with that.
I just beg of you to like look at what happened with the pandemic. I also beg of you to take photos on holiday. Don't worry about your squished arm or your double chin or how you look in a bikini, because I would give anything to get back those photos that I deleted from my 20s, from my teens and 20s, of memories that I can barely piece together now. And your loved ones are going to want those moments. The amount of mums who told me that they always excuse themselves from photos because they've gained weight after pregnancy, and now they know that their kids aren't going to have these like amazing years where they were so little because the mum's not in any of the pictures. And some people told me that their mums have passed away and they've got no documented evidence of their mums because their mums are always like, oh no, I'm not going to be in this picture. Please don't do that. And please take the photographs of the memories of your life and please make memories. Nothing matters as much as making memories. The world is so fucking long and depressing. All we need to be doing right now is focusing on either helping each other or grabbing pleasure wherever we can.
Yeah. Obviously being an ex-Love Islander myself.
Yeah.
You have obviously spoken out about the show over the years, and you know, you've kind of, is the body image stuff around it, do you feel like it's got better or do you still find it problematic?
What do you think about whether it's gotten better?
I was having this conversation this morning, actually, before you were coming in, with my team and producers, because I was like, it's an interesting one because it's something people ask me a lot. And having been on the inside of the machine, I think it's quite hard to have to pull yourself back and look at it from the outside. And I also think I came onto Love Island in a very, I came from a modelling, grid girl, think world where, and like pageants, where like being lined up and measured and stuff was very normal. So to me, when I went into Love Island, we were, you know, in...
Everyone just looks like everyone else at work.
Yeah, it was just, it kind of, and actually, if anything, I thought, when I was, you know, working for the energy drink companies, like we had to be a certain height, there's one hairstyle, there's one nail colour. So I was actually like, oh my God, there's people who are different heights, different hair colours, different styles. Like it was actually, so I think my view was very different to, I think, how the outside sees it. And I think also I was very desensitized, I think, to a lot of the stuff that the girls experienced coming off that show. It was water off my back because my skin was so thick to that kind of people talking about the way you look or the way you look in a bikini or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's a really difficult one. I think that automatically, when you have a show where people are in their swimsuits all summer long, like when I speak to the casting team about this, so like, funny enough, people who hate themselves in their swimwear don't apply, which is why you end up then with a lot of people that all look very similar. And then when you do get someone on who is, I mean, I don't even want to say curvy, but curvier, the internet are vile. So I think then it scares future series come up, people see that and they're like, oh, maybe I'm scared now to apply.
Yeah. I mean, there's the answer, isn't it?
Which I think is so fucking sad.
The answer is that it's a very small portion of the public that they represent, and it's because we are a society that has made people feel too ashamed to think that they could be there looking for love on television.
I know.
One thing I should never have said, and I said it without having watched Love Island because I was a cunt, is that is when I was like upset that it didn't win a BAFTA over some fucking Blue Planet, which is also the best, but also it wasn't up against Blue Planet. But I then watched Love Island and I'd give it all the BAFTAs.
It was my series that won the BAFTA, by the way. I have to get that in there.
Congratulations. Sorry, I was a cunt. but what I think I stand by is just that I think it puts out an aesthetic that reinforces the idea that you have to look a certain way in order to be loved. And I think that's something that stresses me out for young people because they're watching the show. And I don't think that's, I understand that it's not the show's fault and that, you know, it's got certain requirements that mean that certain people are going to sign up for it. And the contestants are lovely and they're young and a lot of them were just like, some of them are born that way, some of them are not. Mm. But I find the uniform appearance of the people in Love Island, the boys have all got the same 8-pack and the Fight Club V, and the girls have got the same nose, the same lips, the same hair, the same bodies, it like small in one part, big in the other part. It's just, I think what it does is it just puts a lot of pressure sometimes. And I don't know how much that's the responsibility anymore now that it's become such a cultural phenomenon. I think there was a window at the beginning where they could have made it open for everyone to feel safe on that show. Mm. But I do massively agree with you that it's also the public has got some accountability there as to what we make people feel safe to do.
Yeah. And I so, think they don't allow, I think they, with one hand, they scream and shout, why haven't you got this? Or
yeah, more and diversity. And also like, look at when everyone said like, why isn't there more diversity? And then look what happened to the black members of the cast.
Look what happened to Romeo and Juliet on the fucking West End.
Like, oh my people, God, I know.
The way they one side's saying, you should do this, and then it happens. And they just, they're so evil and so venomous.
I know ITV are trying to do, is it ITV? Or,
yeah,
I know they're trying to make sure that it's safer now for the contestants, but you're putting people in a very dangerous situation. And I don't know how you fared with your mental health, but I know that it's like, you know, these people are so young. I was fully nervy breakdown age, you know, at the age that those people are when I became famous. And I became famous fast, not as fast as a Love Islander or someone who wins X Factor. And there's a very specific, like, because you're being yourself, you're loved for being yourself. So it feels like people have such a sense of ownership over you. And that must be really, really intense. But that's all I feel is the same thing that I think anyone would expect me to feel, which is just
100%.
That I really hope that people can see that show and enjoy it as entertainment without thinking that because they don't look like that, they wouldn't be lovable.
Before I let you go, I'm going to make you play us a little game because I thought that'd be really good use of your time.
Lovely, lovely. This is my karma for T4.
this is
every time I made Harrison Ford or Robert De Niro or something.
It's very T4-esque. I'm like living my
play
millennial
dream. Innuendo game. No, I love this, honestly.
Who could have told me that I'd have Jamila on my podcast when I was at home,
so
like,
funny.
Eating my cereal, watching T4. Do you remember T4 on the beach?
I can't stop thinking about it. 7 different like weathers in the same day. It was unbelievable. I was like, how is there so hail good. Up my fanny? Like, how is it? How has it come from below? What's happening?
So good. Okay, I'm going to read you a bunch of statements.
Okay.
We decide if they're so wrong, it's right.
Okay.
Just wrong or they're right.
I am a wrong'un though, so, you know, I don't, I'm sorry in advance.
They're just very random.
Okay.
Wearing sunglasses inside.
Love.
Right?
Love. Not because I'm a wanker, just because I really struggle with eye contact. And so that is lovely.
Eating dessert before dinner.
Love. Love. I mean, I start my day, but I'd still want another dessert then after the dinner.
Because I need something sweet after the savoury. To me, that would be counter.
I'm very prone to eating Haribo on my way to dinner.
I love Haribo.
Because I'm like, it's eggs. It's protein. Fried eggs.
When people post vague statuses online, just so people go, what's wrong?
Hate it so much.
What about a hospital wristband?
Can't stand.
Didn't expect to be here on a Thursday.
Yeah, can't stand. Can't stand. Can't stand innuendo, but also like I wouldn't even know what being subtle is, clearly, from my social media. If only I could
lay on the head, right on the nose.
Just so on the nose, just bleeding out in front of the public.
Wearing your partner's clothes without asking them.
Oh, James and I are, we're both big. So we both like, we both wear like sort of unisex clothes. So
Brad
I guess,
and I are basically the same size.
Yeah,
so we all met him.
We steal everything from each other.
The benefit of having I'm a tall woman and he's a relatively smaller man. But, so it's the same size hoodies.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But the problem is for me and James is that I cover everything in chocolate, to the point where when I'm staying in a hotel room, Looks like I shit the bed because I eat, because there's a little stain. So I leave, and I'm notorious for this. I leave little notes for the cleaners that says not poo, just because I don't want them to be traumatized and I don't want them to have that shock.
Maybe I should do that with my fake tan towels.
Definitely. Oh my god!
Oh my god! They think I wipe my ass with the towels.
Yeah.
Oh no!
And it's that sort of Ozempic poo, the one that's like light yellowy.
I wouldn't know, but yeah. If someone mistakes you for another celebrity and you just go along with it, has that ever happened?
Yeah, it happened to me with a really famous director. And when I worked in a video shop, I used to see him around. And then 20 years later, I was no longer working in a video shop and now I'm an actress on a huge TV show that's now nominated for the most prestigious awards in the world. And so I'm at this sort of like brunch getting my award. And he's there and he looks at me and he's like, oh my God, hi. And I was like, no way does he remember me from all those years ago, that little kid from the video shot. So I was like, mate, hello, look at this guy. And I'm walking up to him and can't believe he remembers me. And then he asks me how Quantico is going, which is Priyanka Chopra's show. And I realize, oh my God, this very famous man thinks that I'm Priyanka Chopra, and he's old and he's really nice. And I don't think it's always racism, even though she and I do not look alike. So I did something that I think is illegal, but I just immediately put on an Indian accent. I was like, oh my God, hi. Yeah, no, I found the stunts like kind of, I found them difficult and challenging at first, but I'm really enjoying myself. It's and like I just put on her voice as best as I could. She's got a very elegant, beautiful way of talking. I love her voice. And so I just fully pretended to be her for 5 minutes. And then I left with none of my dignity intact, having committed a felony. But I just didn't want to have an awkward moment.
Yeah. Oh, no.
It was so uncomfortable. It just felt better to impersonate, you know, this wonderful, gorgeous woman, you know, so it's fine. Love it. I'll take
she's
it.
Stunning.
I'll take it. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Oh, I don't want this to end. I could talk to you forever, but this was really, really enjoyable.
Thank you for having me. I had a lovely time.
It was so nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Jamila.